That's right. 4:07 in the afternoon. We are right here at Sharp Facets Gallery this afternoon. Tell you what, got an interesting conversation coming up as I talk with Daryl Johnson, who is superintendent of District 50. I know a lot of people were concerned when they saw the numbers come out from the secondary, elementary and secondary education act federal accountability system. But he's got some things to say about that, and we're going to talk about that along with a lot of other things today. If you've got a question for Daryl, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Daryl Johnson, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic today. It's a great day to be in Greenwood.
It is a great day to be in Greenwood. Is it a great day to be in South Carolina, too?
It's an awesome day to be in South Carolina.
That's good. That's good. Well, I think really we ought to go ahead and just talk about this because I know a lot of people were very surprised to see that District 50, that some of the scores had gone down. 96 did an excellent job. What do you, as the superintendent of schools, have to say about it, Daryl?
When I think about the letter grade that we received, I realize, number one, our teachers come early, they stay late. Our administrators worked hard. Our students gave the best effort. And the score of D is not one we're proud of. But it is the score we made. It's a snapshot of that time and something we're going to work on this year. We are much better than that D indicates, and we're working very hard to make sure that we pull that grade up.
You know, some people had said that they changed the system, that they were doing it. Do you think that that played into it, or what do you think?
There are a number of ways in which you can evaluate a school, and this was just one way that they evaluated us. But there are other ways they're going to evaluate us. We have other reports will be coming out later on this year. And we look forward to seeing what those results are. But what we're going to do is take a look at how they evaluate us and make the necessary adjustments. Because, again, our focus is going to be on teaching and learning, and we've got a lot of good things that are happening in our district. And just as I looked at that letter grade of D, I was reflecting on just 3 years ago, you look at our graduates, they amassed $6 million in scholarships. 2 years ago, $7 million in scholarships. This year, $8 million in scholarships. So again, this grade reflects one score from a number of areas in which they evaluate the school system.
And what one area is that, Daryl?
Well, this was the ESOL weighting, which would be the federal requirements. They looked at a whole lot of the subgroups when they gave us that rating. So it's one in which we knew that they were going to rate us. It's one in which they rate us the same way they did other districts across the state. Now, different districts had different categories and number of ratings, but what we got is what we had earned, and that's one we're not proud of, but one we're going to work on.
Now, when we were talking off the air, you brought up that certain schools, depending on their size, have different divisions. Some, like Greenwood, has much more divisions. You were talking about English as a second language, and you were talking, can you fill us in a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's just depending on your district will determine the number of subcategories you have. But my hat's off to all districts. If they scored an A, that's awesome. And you can't take that away from them. If a district scored a B, whatever the district scored, I'm proud of the ones who had the high grades. But in Greenwood, the bottom line is when they looked at the different subgroups for us, there are some areas that we've got to work on. We've got a plan we're going to put in place so that we can improve on this rating. But a lot of districts in the state had different scores, but the one we're concerned the most about is Greenwood School District 50. What can we do to get our scores up? And that's what we're going to work on.
Now, coming up on the 29th, I understand that they're having a district meeting and putting people together to have a work session to talk about things. What exactly has the district, have y'all looked at to say this is what we need to do?
Yeah, we've looked at a number of areas, and we're having a call board meeting to take a look at what areas were we strong in, what areas did we need to improve. So we've listed some things that we can utilize to make sure that we can do a better job during this upcoming school year. We're going to take a look at our curriculum and best practices that are used by some other school districts that have some high scores. We're going to review what did they do that we didn't do. What areas were we strong in? If we were strong, why were we strong? The areas that we didn't do so well in, what were the causes? We're going to take a look at all of those things and going to break it down by elementary, middle, and high school. So if elementary needs some help in science and social studies, those areas are going to have to focus in on. It could be different at middle school. It could be science, social studies, maybe math. So whatever the area was that's the area we'll concentrate on by the grade level. But please note, all of our schools have some areas in which they were very, very strong, and some of our schools have some areas which we need to work on. So there's places where we're pretty strong. We're going to make sure we share those things we did that got us those good results. And we're going to go across the board and take a look. We did pretty good here. We can do a little bit better there. That's the angle we're going to take.
And will this be graded again next year, or will there be any interim grade, or how does this work as far as grading our schools?
It will be graded again next year.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll get the same grade. Excuse me.
We'll get the same grade? Hello.
We'll get the same category.
Okay, Daryl.
but you got to one thing you got to remember. I think our teachers do an outstanding job of giving it everything that they have. And sometimes you're just not pleased with the results, and sometimes you are. This was not a good representation of what we know that we can do, so we're all very serious about it. We're not happy with that grade of D, and it's what we're going to work on.
From a student perspective, what does this reflect? I know you're not happy with how it turned out. I mean, the teachers, you say, are trying very hard. But from a student perspective, what does this exactly mean?
Well, it would depend on who the student is, because you got to remember that we've got some students who scored a perfect score. And some of the scores in which we had that brought the district down may have been in a particular area. And that's what we're evaluating right now in research, because it will depend on how each individual student felt like he or she performed on those tests. A number of students did an outstanding job, so of course, they're going to be happy when I ask them to continue doing what they did to get that good score. Some others who didn't perform as well, we'll take a look at what they need to work on, and we'll get them that extra help. Now, we've had some budget cuts in the past few years, and we eliminated some programs that would have helped us out, we feel like, in some areas. And we're going to work hard to put some of those programs back in order to get some assistance to some students who may need it. Hopefully, that will help us bring the bar up some.
What type of programs are you referring to?
Well, one program in particular, we had some ESOL classes that we eliminated. We had some after-school tutorial-type programs that we've eliminated. We no longer have summer school, so there are a number of programs that we had to cut out because of the budget cuts. We had academic coaches that we lost. We had reading recovery teachers that we lost. A number of supplemental services that we lost that we think maybe could have contributed to our low scores.
Sure. But these should be issues that all districts are dealing with, are they not?
Well, again, each district got the score based upon how their students performed.
Sure.
In the past years, we've done pretty good, and others have fared in different areas. But this was just a year in which we didn't fare as well as we thought we should have. We're going to work to improve, and again, hats off to those who scored well, but there are some who scored well who are going to have to work hard to keep it there, and I applaud them. But Greenwood School District 50, we've got work to do. We've got the right people in the right place to get the job done. I feel like we're going to be able to come up next year.
This sounds kind of like a football promo here as we get ready for the football season. You know, I know Coach Mack always says each game is individual, and you know, you got to pick yourself up and move on for the next game for the next week. If you don't win, well, then you got to go back and redo and relook at the game and see what you did wrong and try to make it right. That's what sounds like we're talking about here, Daryl.
Well, we're pretty close to it, so we got to go back and reevaluate what we do.
What we do.
Were we prepared? If we were prepared, were we prepared for the right thing? So we're going to do like Coach Mack and is doing out there at Emerald. We're going to take a look at how we performed. What can we do to be just a little bit better?
Now, when we talk about, I'll tell you what, I think we ought to hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we got a lot of things to talk about. Hey, if you've got a question, don't hesitate to pick up that phone, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. Our very special guest this afternoon is Superintendent Daryl Johnson. he agreed to come into the den here and talk with me this afternoon. But, Daryl, you know, we were just talking about what's the most difficult part of your job as far as a being a superintendent. What is the most difficult part?
The most difficult part is probably the unknown. And in terms of how do we ensure that every single child that walks into our door is prepared for the next level, whether it's four-year college, two-year college, the military, or the workforce, working to ensure that every single child gets to that level. And what's a little scary about it is sometimes they're not all equipped when they come to us. Sometimes we're having to be the total family for some children. If we could have more parental support, more community involvement to make sure that every child has that hope. Now, we have some great parental support in all of our schools, and our parents that come out, our parents, our grandparents, aunts and uncles, cousins, nephews that come and support these students. It's absolutely phenomenal. But every once in a while, we have a student or two who needs some additional family support, and that family support is very, very critical to make sure these students understand that life is important, education is vital to them. But on the reverse side, we've got so many caring teachers who take care of these children and adopt them as though these were their children. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our teachers know that they are the smiling face. They are the adults that these students desperately need to see each and every day. And that's why I'm proud of our teachers right here in this district.
You know, one of the things that I know is a problem is parents that work. We have kind of had an attitude at some times where, the school is can teach them everything. You know, that's a hard mission to put on our teachers in our school. That I'll just laissez faire and send them on to school. What do you say?
Well, there's no doubt it's a very, very tough job for our teachers to take on these roles and responsibilities. Yet they take on these roles and responsibilities as being the total parent, sometimes the counselor for the student, sometimes the mother, sometimes the father, sometimes that family member who comes to support them in athletic activities. And they do an awful lot. And single parents, they do a great job. We've got some single parents who do an outstanding job. And as a person who was raised by a single parent and raised by my grandmother, I know what goes on. Sometimes parents have to work in order for that family to survive.
Sure.
And a lot of times our teachers pick up the pieces and help out where they can. But we've got a lot of single parents who work their jobs, and they find a way to come and support their children. They'll call the schools. We get some support from some of our single parent families, but it's just a tough job in which we know some parents would love to be there to support their children, but because they have to work one, two, and sometimes three jobs, it's just real tough for
sure.
them to get there, especially if they have multiple schools to try to get to say about their children. But we know one thing, every parent that I've met wants the best for their child, and each parent wants their child to have a better opportunity than they had.
But they still have to have the tools to be able to do the job. It's just like learning, right? Reading. Reading is, you know, a fundamental, and yet we see how many children that just go from grade to grade to grade without having the skills, and then they become disenchanted with learning. How do you answer that one?
Well, that's one of those ones in which every day our teachers assess each child that comes into that classroom and take a look at where is that child when that child arrives at school. Some are a little more advanced than others. Some need a little more help than others. But each one of them deserve that attention of that teacher. And our teachers have to just take a look at each student and determine where they are and where we need them to be and just start working on that student one child at a time.
Sure. But how do you, when you have a class of 30 or 40, work with that one child at a time when you have that larger class? And I know we have larger classes based on the fact that we had to make some budget cuts.
Yeah, we had to make some budget cuts, but we don't have any classes of 40.
Okay.
Unless it's PE. And we got some classes of 30. That may be at the extreme at some time, depending what that class is. But even in classes of 15 or 20, it depends on the type of students that you're teaching. Sometimes you can have a large class, depending on what that class is. But the teacher-to-student ratio is definitely up since we had those major budget cuts. We love our classroom ratios to be a lot lower than we have them. But we knew that they were going to go up with the budget cuts and some changes in the program that we had to implement. So this, And these are the years that we knew were coming as a result of the tough budget cuts that everyone has faced, not just education, but other parts of life. That it's
absolutely
a little different now.
So when we look at an elementary school teacher and we look at a secondary teacher, elementary teachers have to teach all different topics or all different subjects, as opposed to a high school being able to be more specialized. What are the challenges that they face, and particularly when we look at the scores that were handed down here? It has to be tough to be up on all the subjects and make it come through day in and day out.
Every subject area that we teach is tough, and I've had experience at each level. I've been a high school English teacher. I've taught journalism and language arts at the middle school. I've been an elementary school principal. And every level that I've worked on brings about a different challenge. Mm-hmm. The elementary teachers are pressed to make sure they teach all of the subject areas and also make sure they get in the required PE minutes to make sure the students get the art and the music. And the elementary teachers do a good job of teaching all of these subjects. Then once we get into middle school, they're pretty much getting them into a point in which they're going to be semi-specialized, yet we've got the different component of a child going from the elementary into the middle level. Now we've got a lot of different things that are going on there. Then once they get to high school, they're definitely into the courses in which it's pretty specific. Yet we've got to get them prepared to graduate and move on into college. So each level has different challenges, but in each level our teachers are prepared to take those children where they are, teach them those different subjects, and do the best that they can with each child, knowing that we have an eclectic district, and each teacher has an eclectic class to a certain degree, and we have to differentiate the learning, because in each class you've got a group that could be high, a group that's in the middle, and a group that's low. And every parent wants to know that the teacher is teaching to their child's level, which calls our teachers to make sure to have some good lessons planned and differentiate for the different learning styles and different levels.
You know, one of the things that Mick Zeiss, the superintendent of schools for the state of South Carolina, has said that he wants to grade our teachers. What is your opinion on that? Give them a letter grade.
I wholeheartedly disagree with giving teachers a letter grade for a number of reasons. It's not fair to give a teacher a letter grade for things that are occurring beyond his or her control. And I think our teachers do agree that there should be some type of assessment, but the assessment needs to be fair and equitable across the board, because we're going to give a teacher a letter grade for some things that are beyond his or her control. If the student is not on grade level when the student comes to my class, probably the best assessment will be what happens to that student while he or she is in my class. Because the student is not on grade level when they arrive, then you're putting a grade level on me over something I truly don't control. We don't give a grade level to our parents when they send them to school. We don't give a grade
level. Well, what do you think about that idea? Maybe that's an interesting idea, Daryl. Maybe we need to grade our parents when we bring these kids into school. How would that work?
I have a question that I would always ask.
Yes.
Are we doing our best? If the answer is yes, what else can we do? If the answer is no, there's a lot that we need to do.
But, well, what about the teacher that may be burnt out? What do we do about that teacher? What do we do about the teacher maybe who their best really isn't up to the standards of what is necessary in today's world?
We have assessment and accountability systems already in place. And if a teacher's not working up to par, we already have assessments in place to address those. But to come in and to give a teacher a letter grade is not fair to the teachers. These teachers are professionals. They've gone to school, earned degrees, worked hard, and they teach any and everyone that walks into the door. They don't have an opportunity to pick who they teach. They can't send certain students back because they're not equipped. What teachers do is the impossible. They take every student that walks into that door and give them the best that they have, hoping to prepare that student for the next level. And as long as our teachers continue to do that, I will be proud, because in Greenwood 50, our teachers know they make the difference. The key to the whole school system is not the superintendent. It is not administrators. Teachers make the difference every single day.
And we're now going to join South Carolina News in Progress. Thank you so much, Daryl Johnson. We'll be back after the break.
For the individual engrossed in McDonald's new Deluxe Angus Third Pounder, the world simply ceases to exist. You savor each bite of thick, juicy 100% Angus beef, topped with crisp red onions and crinkle-cut pickles, oblivious to the fact that the pantsuit you borrowed from your roommate has become a full-body napkin for your fanatical feasting frenzy. Angus Axiom Number 5, ignorance is bliss, or in this case, vice versa. Get lost in one of three new Angus Third Pounders, only at participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. If you're just joining us, my very special guest this afternoon is Daryl Johnson, superintendent for District 50. He was a little wound up before the break. I think he's calmed down a little bit now. We're having a good time talking about education, talking about what the future holds. You know, Daryl, one of the things that I know that you are proud about is Greenwood District 50 embracing the technology. What would you like to talk to us about that about?
Well, I think one of the main keys for any educational program in any district is you got to be able to not only embrace technology, but be prepared to go to the next level. In fact, in Greenwood School District 50, we're launching what we're calling 50G, the new generation of learners. We're putting a lot of emphasis into making sure that our students are prepared for the future by infusing and integrating the technology into the lessons today. If you think about it, people my age and a little younger, we're probably going to be considered digital immigrants. But the students that are coming
now, we're going to be considered outdated.
That would be a true statement.
Yes, exactly. Go ahead.
Because our youngsters that are coming through now, they are students who they don't have a clue what it used to be to carry the old bag phone and how we used to communicate. With all of the technology that they have, we've got to make sure we're prepared for the future, and that's what we're trying to do is introduce them to how can we be more aggressive in letting them utilize the technology on a day-to-day basis. How do we get that into their hands? They use iPads and iPods and all of the different technology and the social media that wasn't there and didn't exist when I came through school, but a lot has changed for them and a lot is changing for us.
Absolutely. Now, speaking about social media and the cell phones and whatnot, what do you think, though, about our young people? I mean, I'm sure you see this where you see kids sitting at a table, not even talking to each other, but texting back and forth across the table or showing pictures, showing what somebody wrote. I am truthfully concerned about our young people and the art of conversation and the ability to have a good conversation. I mean, you and I are having a great conversation here this afternoon, and yet I worry about our students being able to do that futuristically.
I think the technology is awesome for our students, and we got to make sure that we are careful so that there's a balance between how much they're on the computers and how much they actually communicate with each other. Because I would prefer to have a face-to-face conversation with a person, and I can see the facial expression. I can hear the emotion in your voice when we're talking. But if you're on that computer, you lose a whole lot. Nevertheless, the way that we communicate in today's society, we have to have that technology which allows us to go across the globe in a matter of seconds and retrieve information, send information, and have conversations that's global. But the personal communication, sitting down one-to-one and talking to a person is an art that we don't need to lose. We've got to make sure that we have that balance so that when students are able to communicate with the social media, they do the texting and the tweeting and the Facebooking and face-looking. I don't do a lot of that, so I don't know much about it. But to make sure that we have a balance so that if they're spending a lot of time at home utilizing that technology and that computer, we also need to make sure that they take time to maybe talk and share ideas and learn to the value of working together and being expressive.
Absolutely. I think that is key. I also am worried about the business letter and the ability to write real English letters. And as a former English teacher, I know that has to be somewhat of a concern for you.
Yeah, the penmanship. I recall, you know, teaching high school English and language arts at the middle school level, the penmanship and having them actually write out a paper, I miss seeing that type of work. But when I take a look at what colleges are expecting and different reports we have to turn in, they're all asking for it to be double-spaced. And that does not require great penmanship. Nevertheless, I think that's an art we need to make sure that we continue. It's important that the person can actually sit down and write a letter. Imagine if you were away from home, from your family. It'd be great to get that email and that text, but nothing's going to make your day any brighter than to get the letter from your son or daughter telling you how they feel, how much they missed you, how much they love you, and that handwriting, that signature that they put on it really goes a long way. And I think that's what we lose in terms of technology as opposed to actually sitting down and writing letters like we used to. Hope we never lose the letter writing ability.
Do they still have to learn penmanship in school?
Yes, we teach them how to write.
You do? Okay.
But it's not required as much for papers, because most of our students who have research papers and things to turn in, it's usually typed.
Sure. So I know that there's a lot of things that other things I want to talk about, but one of the things that I am concerned about is the security in the schools. Here we are back at school. We had Sandy Hook last winter. What changes have you made at District 50 to make sure that nothing like this happens? I will say this. When Sandy Hook happened, I talked to a lot of national people, and I reminded them that Jamie Wilson happened right here at Oakland, and a lot of people, because of the internet, we didn't have the internet then, were not as aware that that actually happened right here in Greenwood. So what changes have we made today?
Well, one of the things that is important to note, that no program that I'm aware of is 100% guaranteed to stop people who want to do bad things at schools. But we're doing our level best to make sure that when parents drop their children off, we provide, first of all, a safe and secure learning environment. We've done a number of things that I wouldn't share on the air because we don't want to let people know exactly what we've done in specifics, but it's important to know that all of our schools have one entry point, and we've got cameras throughout our schools. We've got thousands of cameras in our district, one entry point at the schools, in which you have to be buzzed into a school. You get, come in, got to be buzzed in, including myself. So we've got security measures in place. We're checking IDs. If someone looks like they shouldn't be there, we're asking questions. We'll make sure we're keeping doors locked, windows shut, monitoring cameras, and we've got a great rapport with our sheriff department and our city police, in which we've got a resource officer at all of our secondary schools. I'm so proud of the fact that our sheriff has had some of his deputies, they've adopted our elementary schools.
Sort of a buddy system for your certain of the elementary and middle schools, correct?
Yes, ma'am. They'll stop by, and they're getting to know the principals, the teachers, the students. They're adopting these schools, coming by at random, different times. Also, the highway patrol has also adopted some of our schools, and we're making sure that our students are familiar, A, with law enforcement. They are supporters of the school big time, and we even had a mock disaster drill this summer at Brewer Middle School. Last year, it was at Greenwood High School. Last year, it was at Brewer Middle School, and we had a mock disaster in which we had the sheriff deputies, city police, emergency personnel, every different agency you can name. We all came and went through a drill. That was a surprise for everyone, had administrators on hand to see what happened. Then they debriefed. We went back and talked about what worked well, what didn't work well, how can we work together to make sure we communicate better, to make sure we do one thing, provide a safe and secure learning environment for our students and staff.
Sure. So was that a success?
Yes.
Successful?
Ma'am. It was a huge success. And I recall after the drill, we've got safety committees that are meeting with law enforcement to talk about some possible things that are happening. And every time we see something happen in another part of the country, we always ask, what would happen if this took place in Greenwood? How would we respond? What will we do to make sure, A, that we provide a safe learning environment? Because, again, the first part of learning, you got to have a safe and secure environment. And our parents need to know that when they drop the children off, it's on us to make sure we keep them safe.
Sure.
And we'll do our very best to do that, but just want to make sure everyone understands that we do our best to make sure the environment is safe. But I don't think there's any school system in America that can guarantee 100% that X or Y won't occur. But we want to be prepared to do our best to make sure we keep them safe if some type of situation should occur.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's really scary when you think down there in Atlanta what just happened. I mean, and if that gal in the office hadn't kept her head, what could have happened that day? So it can be very, very close. It doesn't have to be very far away to make you think about all these issues.
Yes, and every time we see these things go across the TV screen, we hear the bulletins, the first thing I'm thinking about, are we safe in Greenwood? Are our schools secure? And we work with law enforcement, and if something happens in town, they've done a great job of letting us know what was going on. We've had lockdowns, and sometimes we may lock down a school and take that extra precaution rather than not being prepared for it. So we're going to try to make sure that we take every precaution necessary to make sure that school is safe and that we're responsive and prepared for the various drills and things that prepare us for emergencies that happen in our school system.
Absolutely. We are here with Superintendent of Schools, Daryl Johnson. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be back. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276. Oh, that's right. We're right back here. I'm talking with Daryl Johnson. He is, of course, superintendent for District 50 right here. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about the... about portability and being able to take those educational dollars to whatever type of school. Daryl, what is your feeling about that? Because there's been a lot of conversation about that some of your schools, your brick-and-mortar schools, might lose out if a student had the ability just to pick up and go where they would like.
Well, my thoughts on that is I believe in equity, because in the public school system, we have to take each and every child that comes to our door. I think competition is great, and it's going to make us do a better job. But we need to make sure that the playing field is level. So if our teachers are required to have certain certifications and certain staff developments, as long as that's fair across the board and every requirement we're held to, they're held to, that's fine. But let's make sure that we level the playing field so that if I have to accept everyone, let's make sure everyone has to accept everyone. We all have a level playing field. And that was going to be a little fair. So I'm all for children having different options and opportunities. The virtual schools is a good thing. And I think we got to get beyond brick and mortar, because it is possible. I don't see a problem for a student being able to take a class here at our high school and also taking a class in a virtual location. We've had the dual credit program going on for years in which students take classes in our schools and also our technical and our four-year colleges. I think that's great. The competition is fine, but as long as the playing field is level and everyone is held to the same rules and regulations, I'm open for a conversation.
Sure. You know, one of the things that concerns me, though, is how fast our kids are growing up. Are they able to socially and, you know, I know mentally they're moving at a very fast pace, but what about the other side of it, the social, the growing up here, all the things that they go through? It seems like we have kids that are actually graduating from high school and Piedmont Technical College at the same time, and they're ready to go off to college, and yet they haven't really grown up, have they?
I think that goes back to one of our topics earlier about parents. I think that's a parent decision, because some children mature at a faster rate than another child. I think the parent is the one who needs to be part of that decision to determine whether or not that child is ready for college after 3.5 years of high school. And if that child is ready, the parents think the child is ready, that should be a parental choice as to whether or not that student is ready to go to school before they've been in high school for 4 years. And by the same token, we've had students who have enough units to graduate within 3 years or 3.5 years, but the parents feel like that high school experience is something they want their child to go through and enjoy, because the parents understand you get one shot at high school, and once you're out, it's over, and we don't want to rush that. But I think that's where the parents need to be the one to make the call, and that is not a school decision. That's totally up to the parent and the student to make that call.
And what about virtual schools, online schools? Where do you think that, I think there's something to be said for socialization, interaction, and everything. Do you really get that in an online school day in and day out?
Well, I think, again, in an online school, if you're going to be working pretty much with the computer, you lose out so much on being around the other students, being part of the band. Marching in the band is an exciting thing. Being on the football team, being a cheerleader, or just being a student that's part of the student body, interacting with the students going up and down the hallway, interacting with people on a daily basis, the class change, in the lunchroom, outside, having fun. I think the interaction that you get in a public school with students from different parts of town who may not look like you, who may not think like you, but being able to get along in a society where we have different people, different values, different visions, but being able to get along and understand that we may not always agree, but we can agree to respect each other, to get along with each other. I think that's the beauty of being in a school system in which you have that one-to-one contact, and you get to see people smiling and laughing, and sometimes they'll look at you, and you get a chance just to see the body languages. I think that's what's missing sometimes if you're not in a regular classroom or a public school.
Sure. You know, I remember the first time I interviewed you, we had a conversation about that your teachers were supposed to have like stores where they invited the students and the students had to like to go to that store. I remember that. How has that program developed for you, or have you changed since you've been here, what, going on 7 years, 8 years? Yeah, what is it now?
This is my 8th year, and I've had to make some changes. But one thing that I am excited about is I felt like if a teacher's classroom was a store in the mall, would the students come in and shop? Mm-hmm. Could our teachers make a profit? Well, from what I've seen at the high schools, middle schools, and elementary schools, a lot of our teachers would be in business. A lot of them would be expanding because we've got some teachers right now that our students love to go in and they love to talk to the teacher. And on the first day of school this year, there were several classes that I went into, and day one instruction was going on, and I mean the teachers and students were engaged in the lesson, well-spirited, and those students loved being there, and the teachers loved having them there. And I was thinking to myself, if this were a store in the mall, we wouldn't even have to have a sale to make a profit.
Well, that'd be pretty amazing in today's world. Now, have you got any classes, though, that you have had to make changes with, though, with some of the teachers?
Well, we've had some class changes, I'm sure, but since this is just our 6th day of school, I'm not sure.
I meant since you started this program of, productivity in the classroom and making the kids want to come in there. I'm sure somewhere along the way there's been a teacher or two that just hasn't made the grade.
Yeah, we've had to make some adjustments in the mall. There are some places in which we've had to make
You've had to close some of those stores.
Yeah, there have been some stores that have closed, but the benefit of it is the students are still shopping and the mall is still open.
Well, there you go. That's a really good thing. You know, we wanted to talk just a little bit about the magnet schools and the ACT programs. What a tremendous addition that has been here in Greenwood. And one of the things that you were telling me is it's not always all about the grade. So let's just address that real quick. What can you tell us about the magnet programs?
The magnet programs are really flourishing. When I came, we didn't have any. We started the ACT magnet program at Brewer when I first started, and right now in the ACTS programs at Brewer and Whitfield, we've got 296 students. Our AVID program at Northside Emerald High School in Greenwood High has 283 students, and our STEM program at Westview, we've got 156 students. Up at Hodges, 106. We've got 841 students in our magnet programs. Right here in Greenwood, South Carolina, you've got as many choices right here as almost anywhere you could go in this state, and we're proud of that. And our teachers do a fantastic job, and there's just one concern. If you go to one of our magnet schools, be prepared to be delayed, because once you get in and see the engagement and the enthusiasm of what's happening in those classes, it's just remarkable.
It is, and I have actually been out there, the music part with Beverly Somas.
Yes.
I've been out there with
awesome.
That program. Yes.
Awesome.
But but just getting into the program isn't enough.
No, getting into the program is, once you get in, that's just step one. you've got to work hard to stay in the program, because there's definitely a lot of rigor in that program. And we make sure that we're going to challenge those students on another level from just being in a regular classroom. So once you get into the magnet program, that's just the first step of it. But I found that the students understand there's going to be a little more rigor, but there's more excitement, and the students are working hard to not only stay in the program, but to matriculate through the middle school and enjoy themselves and learn so much in the productions and activities and shows that they go to. It's just phenomenal.
Now, when they go from middle school, though, to high school, what happens if they were in the magnet programs?
For the AVID program, we've got it at Greenwood and Emerald High School. And what happens is we need to have enough students to stay in a core group for a magnet program to continue in the high school. We need to have 15 to 18 students to make it work in a high school setting, because you got to make sure you have a certain number of students to make that class meet. So that's one of the concerns. Once they get out of middle school into high school, you've got cheerleading, you've got band, you've got high school athletics, you've got different clubs. Then the students tend to get to the high school. And we all know that once you leave middle school, the excitement of being to high school, it makes students realize, hey, there are a lot of other things we can get involved in.
So that would be something that should actually be addressed, shouldn't it, Daryl?
Yes. But again, we've always told our parents, if we have enough students for that class to make, we're open. We're open to suggestion at all times.
Absolutely. Well, Daryl Johnson, Superintendent of Greenwood District 50, it's always a pleasure to sit down and talk to you. Thanks for coming out today.
I've enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you so much. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. That's going to do it for us. Make sure you tune in tomorrow morning on the I Love Ann Show. That's right. I'll be back. Don't you go away. Bye-bye, everybody.